Hello, good morning and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg and this is your Biz News Briefing. You'll notice today we've gone to a much tighter, sharper format. We'll be talking two big stories today. The moment for Bitcoin above $80,000. Jason Welts from Jaltech will be in our top story today. And then the Trump bump. David Shapiro will explain to us why Wall Street had its best week in a year last week, and stocks that are in the Biz News portfolio jumped by a third or more. But first off, we're going to have a look at the markets and how they closed last week. Wall Street about 5% better on the S&P 500 index. NASDAQ up more than 6%. And Bitcoin, $81,385. And that's a 7.5% gain in the last week. As far as our portfolio is concerned, well, gangbusters doesn't even start to describe it. Palantir was 42% higher on the week. How so? Well, Palantir does have, it's an AI company, but it does a lot of business with the US government. Its chairman is a guy called Peter Thiel, and Peter Thiel is pretty close to Donald Trump, just putting it mildly, as is Elon Musk. Elon Musk was in meetings this week with Donald Trump, with the presidents of both Turkey and Ukraine. So he's been pulled in already. He's been tipped as the efficiency czar in the United States. And investors are a little cynical. They reckon that Elon's going to make money out of this. Tesla up 33%. Both of those stocks really jumping incredibly. If you take out the direct Trump-related shares, the Russell 2000 index, which is in the Biz News portfolio, the reason for that being included was because of the belief that as it hasn't done as well as the Magnificent Seven, this is on small shares across, or small and median caps across the American stock market. They will benefit most by an interest rate decline, which we're now into that cycle. That was up by 9%, that index last week. Not bad for an ETF. NVIDIA 9% as well. And then Amazon 6%. Pretty much all of the Biz News portfolio stocks had a rousing improvement last week on the Trump bump. David Shapiro will tell us more about why that happened in a little while. Also on the local stock market, on Friday, we went the other way. And that's primarily because resources were under pressure. There is still, people are still working out what the whole Trump in the White House impact is going to be on the resources sector. We had bad news coming from China, where the stimulus package is not working, and China is actually going into deflation at the moment. So the resources index was down by 3%. The other sectors fell in sympathy. The Rand 24 cents off at 17.61 against the US dollar, and 23 cents weaker at 22.74 against the pound. As far as the JSE is concerned, we had a trading update from Fashini, which the market loved. Share price up 5%, missed the price in sympathy, 3.8% higher. Sasol down on the concerns over the oil price. And Karoo, now here's an interesting one. The owners of Cartrack, you might recall that what happened last week was that with the conversation we had with Altron, Altron gave us some insights into its operation, which is a competitor with Cartrack. It's called Netstar. And then we compared the market values between Karoo and Altron. And Altron is sitting at around 8 billion rand. Karoo, more than, well, around 20 billion rand. And so as a consequence, there might have been some adjustments over there. Moving on to the news story of the day, we're going to talk in a moment to Jason Welts of Jaltech. But let's pick up with our partners at Bloomberg for the latest on Bitcoin.
Bitcoin right now above 81,000. This reflects a bet on President-elect Trump being supportive of digital assets, as well as the prospect of a Congress featuring pro-crypto lawmakers. Here is Kavita Gupta of Delta Blockchain Fund.
President Trump has actually said that he's going to change the current SEC commissioner and going to have much more pro-friendly agenda. So everyone is expecting much more clarity on regulations. And the feeling, what I kept on feeling within the crypto ecosystem, is that it is going to be crypto for America and America for crypto after a very, very long time.
Crypto for America, America for crypto. Jason, you are the crypto czar at Jaltech, our partners, our business partners there. And I guess it's not just crypto for America. The whole world is participating in this.
Hi, Alec. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's pretty broad-based, the uptake of Bitcoin recently, but I mean, definitely catalyzed by Donald Trump's recent victory. Don't want to take too much of the shine away from your next guest, but definitely the Trump bump thing in crypto too.
Just explain that to us, Jason, why Bitcoin would have jumped as strongly as it has. We heard a little bit there from our partners at Bloomberg that it's to do with Trump being maybe easing regulations on Bitcoin. Are they really that tight under Biden that it'll make such a big difference?
Well, I mean, on Bitcoin specifically, the regulatory regime in the US isn't super unfriendly. We did have the SEC trying to block Bitcoin ETFs for quite some time, but eventually having to give up on that effort after some court rulings pushed back against their stance. But the regulatory regime for assets that could be considered securities, such as the burgeoning decentralized finance industry, where a lot of tokens have security-like characteristics, but no clear path to registration through the SEC's formal channels. And for assets like that, where the market is really expecting a more clear and simpler regulatory regime with some potential carve-outs from the securities legislation, I think that's where a lot of the positivity is coming from for crypto natives such as myself. On Bitcoin, definitely the Trump bump has a rising tide lifts all boats. Bitcoin, no exception. I would say Bitcoin is outside of other crypto assets in the decentralized finance space. Bitcoin serves as a sort of gold-like asset, and there's some other kind of drivers that are supporting it there.
Well, a regular participant at the BizNews conference is Stafford Marcy, who's going to be with us again in March. He's a Bitcoin maximalist. He says, forget everything else, just go with Bitcoin. And I'm sure that Elon Musk would possibly agree with that. But more importantly is, here in South Africa, we often have heard people saying Bitcoin is rubbish. They repeat what Charlie Munger, the late Charlie Munger, said, it's rat poison. It doesn't mean anything. And yet in the US, you're finding a lot of smart money is going in there, particularly of late institutional investors. What's changed their minds?
Well, I mean, I think Bitcoin itself is a kind of a new paradigm in assets. I mean, it's the first sort of completely trustless asset that you don't need to hold physically while still being able to maintain its scarcity. And it's taken a lot of people a long time to kind of come around to that idea. Even there's no guarantee that will have any value just by itself. If you look at gold prices, for instance, a lot of gold's value comes from a monetary premium that is a result of decades of use as money, centuries of use, should I say. And you sort of have this herd behavior, and it's just more of a social, the value is more of a social dynamic as opposed to a real fundamental, tangible valued asset like oil or something that can be used in productive processes. It's a very interesting asset, and I think it's definitely here to stay. We've seen endorsement from a number of players in the financial industry recently, and we've seen a kind of a, maybe not a flood yet, but definitely some interest from pension funds around the world. Just last week, there was a pension fund in the UK that took a 3% position in Bitcoin, which is the highest I've seen. Every other pension fund that's dipping their toes, they're looking at a couple of bips of their portfolio. Whereas this UK pension fund with a 3% allocation, which is pretty ballsy, but it's paid off so far at least.
Well, our number one supporter of this program, Rob Hersoff, is pinging through quite a lot of his views and comments on this as we are talking. He's buying Bitcoin. It's up 84% this year to date. Is it time for a breather?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of a pullback recently. I mean, there's definitely positive angles out of the Trump election, but there are also some worrying signs that may impact risk assets more broadly. If his tariff policies and his austerity measures in government that have at least been espoused, if those do result in a sort of in a broad-based recession in the U.S., that could definitely be detrimental to Bitcoin, as well as pretty much all risk assets. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised just to see a little bit of a pullback here. But equally, I wouldn't be surprised for us to just sort of go off to the races here. Generally, once we've breached all-time highs and we enter sort of a price discovery period of time, where really it's anyone's guess where prices sort of level out to.
Jason, in the BizNews portfolio, we put 2% into Bitcoin and we took a geared position through a company called MicroStrategy. As a consequence of MicroStrategy's incredible run, that 2% is now 8%. Would you recommend to your clients at Jaltic, clearly you're in charge of Bitcoin or crypto there, so you'd be telling them to have some. What is the percentage of their portfolios that you would be recommending they hold today?
I mean, it obviously depends on your individual circumstances, but as kind of a rule of thumb, I would say no more than 5% for your average investor. And for most people, anything over 2% is probably not going to be advisable. But if you understand the industry, you have a strong view on Bitcoin and you've done your own research, a higher allocation might make sense in your personal circumstances. And for me personally, I'm quite young. I break those rules of thumbs. Quite significantly.
Jason Waltz is with Jaltic, and thank you for your contribution today, Jason, for giving us some insights into the Bitcoin story. Well, David Shapiro will be with us in a moment talking about the Trump bump. But before we get to David, let's pick up on a very interesting development on Wall Street. Remember that Wall Street's had its best week last week, its best week in a year. The increase in the various indices has taken them all to new all-time highs. And part of the excitement is that the treacle that had been put into the American business system by the Biden administration is going to be removed through a new head of antitrust. And what that means is that somebody who's in charge of mergers and acquisitions, or allowing them or giving them the thumbs up or thumbs down, is going to see them as an opportunity to grow the economy, not as a concern that you'll have excessive power. Here are our partners at Bloomberg.
An Oxford-educated antitrust lawyer who advised the first Trump White House on technology policy is apparently helping the president-elect pick the next head of the FTC. We have more from Bloomberg's Denise Pellegrini.
Sources say Gail Slater, aide to Vice President-elect J.D. Vance, is advising Trump's transition team on antitrust policy, including crafting a short list of candidates to serve as FTC chair. 52-year-old Slater also being considered for a top antitrust job herself, according to sources, and she's also being tapped to advise the administration more broadly on tech and economic policy. Denise Pellegrini, Bloomberg Radio.
Well, David Shapiro, there we have it. We've got a new trust antitrust czar. As we kept continuously reminded, David Shapiro said he would have voted for Kamala Harris had he had a vote in the United States. Trump's there. He's won. Your customer or your clients are delighted, no doubt, at what's happened in the past week. Is it overdone?
No, it's eased the pain. But you know, Alec, I think as we go through the post-mortem, you realize just how bad the Democrats were and how America voted. It had nothing to do with the abortion rights. It had nothing to do with those elements, his character. It all had to do with the economy, and particularly at the low end of the market where people couldn't afford prices anymore. They were worried about immigration, the safety. So there were a lot of factors that are coming through which highlight how the Democrats just neglected or called it wrong. And you're finding the world shifting, you know, certainly opinion shifting towards Trump. I think there are a lot of good things. I love this deregulation issue. It's something that really stuck in my throat, particularly with big companies. You know, I'm a great believer that large companies drive the economy because they make money, they put into R&D, and they develop new industries. And as we see, Europe likes to break them up. And I think Europe's going to be perhaps one of the areas of this market, of this economy, that's going to suffer, you know, with a weak China and now with the Trump tariffs and also putting pressure on them. So I'm in favor of that. I think that I don't think the companies have abused their authority. You know, there's a lot of competition within them. So the deregulation is one of the big drivers. The banks, Alec, was the other story. Because, number one, you're going to have lower taxes and also deregulation, which allows them to use their money, which they had put, you know, put aside for productive ways and also to grow the economy, is one of the reasons we saw banks very, very strong. So I think that was part of it. The other part, small caps, you're well, you know, into the Russell 2000, because smaller businesses now will be able to cope better as imports imports face excise duties or higher tariffs and that. So that's why small caps are going. Tech as well, because of the deregulation. But the other thing is interest rates are coming down as well, you know, which has also been quite a stimulus for the market. We expect more. I know Powell was very stoic, didn't give anything away, and he's going to continue his path. But that's also a big driver of the growth that we are seeing. So a lot of things in favor of this market going better still.
David, you mentioned Jerome Powell. He's the Federal Reserve Chairman. He was asked a number of times at the press conference, or at least twice that I heard, why doesn't he resign because Trump wants to get rid of him? The people who believe in federal or Reserve Bank independence or the central bank independence are very concerned at this, because if you get a politician who starts overspending on the one hand and then pumps interest rates or drops interest rates lower on the other, it can be massively inflationary and longer term can really hurt you. Is there a threat that Jerome Powell will be kicked out, and indeed that could affect not just America, but because it's so important, the rest of the world?
No, he won't get kicked out. I think he goes right through to 2026, and he'll stay along that way. I don't think Trump will start to interfere. I think that was more bluster than anything else. He wanted rates to come down faster than they have. I think the pace that we're seeing now is comfortable, and the market's telling you that. And another one in December, and we'll see. Probably the market's pricing in another 100 points, which is 1%. So, and one has to watch inflation. I think the last thing, can you imagine in our country if the government had got control of the Reserve Bank, you know, of Lesetia? Can you imagine what would have happened here? And that's an indication. They would have just gone mad, bring rates down, inflation would have gone through the roof. So I think that's a very stable force to have an independent Reserve Bank. And America won't allow it, you know, regardless. There still are those circuit breakers, even though Trump might control all three pillars.
And I guess on the other hand, it's perhaps a little bit of moral suasion there. The Trump stocks, I want to ask you about this. Trump media, up 82%. Lots of speculation. It's worth $7 billion. Lots of speculation that there's going to be a deal with Elon Musk's X, or formerly Twitter. Do we put much credence onto that? Can Trump engineer something like that? We know the bromance with Elon is very close.
You know, the one thing you can't ignore is the, you know, the momentum behind what's happening here. And whether or not this eventually leads to anything, I don't know. There's so many different media channels now that it's very hard to decide which one's going to go. He's got momentum behind it, and it'll pay to just go along for the ride. But where we are in a year or two, I don't. You know, it's difficult to call.
And your call on...
Alec, you know.
Yeah, sorry. Your call on Tesla, up another 8% on Friday, 33% on the week, and Palantir up 42% on the week. Is this excessive?
No. I like Palantir because I can understand it. With Tesla, I don't know where it's going to go. You know, that's why. Because, number one, Trump is a pump. You know, he wants to pump oil. He wants to buy, which is not exactly where Elon wants it to go. So the other thing is Elon's got a lot of factories in China. you know, how's that going to play out? Electric vehicles starting to slow down now. I think people are finding it's not that easy, particularly if you're going long distances. So, you know, in a short, in just in a one soundbite, it's not going the way that everybody thought. So, but on the other hand, Elon is into AI in a big way, which is a massive growth area. You know, his computers, his exposure to battery storage and things like that. But it's all counter where Trump wants to be. So I'm trying to work out, where do we see Elon? You know, it's not, he wants renewable because he's got the battery storage, he's got the electric vehicles, the robo taxis and everything. But Trump's not, he's not in the same camp. So you, SpaceX, I can get my head around. But I think there's a lot for us to digest. But Palantir, I like, you know, very much so. Don't. It's got a good future, and a lot of businesses like that, I think, are still going to go. We're not over this whole AI story. This is only the beginning.
David Shapiro with Sasfin Wealth, bringing us up to date on the Trump bump. Well, let's have a look now at the news updates that didn't quite make our top story of the day. The one, because we didn't really have anyone to talk about, was some pretty hectic news from a South African perspective. Johann Rupert has gone in to bat for South Africa. We have confirmed reports that Rupert was the guy who put together that 15-minute conversation that we reported on Friday, and Cyril Ramaphosa confirmed, between Ramaphosa and Donald Trump. That was on Friday. But ahead of that, both Rupert and his good friends, Ernie Els and Rurik Gobel. Ernie, of course, a great golfer. Rurik, who's a businessman but also a pretty good golfer as well. They met with Trump in Mar-a-Lago and spoke to him about AGOA. Now, AGOA is really important for South Africans to think about, because AGOA is the ability for South African companies to have access into America tariff-free. And the report back was that Trump listened carefully and respectfully to what Johann Rupert had to say. Let's hear what the rest of the world, though, might be facing when it comes to tariffs. Here's our partners at Bloomberg.
Or tariffs, although some analysts say they could have huge implications. Here's Bloomberg's Amy Morris in Washington.
European Central Bank Vice President Luis de Guindos said the day after the election that economic output would be weaker, price pressures stronger, and established trade flows disrupted. And he said the ECB will incorporate into its outlook whatever policies will be announced by the new administration and then decide how to react. Guindos argued it will take time to assess how trade policies under Trump will affect the economy. He says they'll incorporate that into their projections and take into consideration the evolution of demand and the evolution of energy prices. In Washington, Amy Morris, Bloomberg Radio.
On the political front here at home, Floyd Shivambu, a former deputy commander-in-chief of the EFF, Economic Freedom Fighters, who moved across to Jacob Zuma or the Zuma family's MK party, is now the Secretary General. He was appointed over the weekend. He joins a former EFF compatriot, Dalian Porfu, who came under fire during an interview that Chris Steyn had with the man who founded the MK party. Let's have a look at this.
Advocate Dalian Porfu, I think I would say bluntly that he's a liar. Dalian Porfu was not part of the formation of Umkhonto weSizwe party. Maybe he's talking about the Umkhonto weSizwe veterans. Maybe he was part of that, but not the MK party. The MK party was formed by myself with other six comrades who I was consulting with when we wanted to start the registration of the party. Mr. Mbofu only came in when we were having, I think, a meeting after the launch in Hyde Park at Mr. Zuma's daughter's house. That's when Zuma introduced me to Mr. Mbofu that this is the man that registered Umkhonto weSizwe. And that's when we started to engage about the formation of Umkhonto weSizwe. He was never there. He was nowhere until at that time.
And that is Jabulani Khumalo, the man who founded Umkhonto weSizwe. The full interview with my colleague Chris Stain is on BizNews TV. Still with Chris, every Sunday, she and Neil De Beer get together for what they call the Sunday Show. And this weekend, they were talking about something really bizarre. The ANC marching against itself. You just got to watch this clip.
Well, Neil, talking about members of cabinet marching against itself, in a sense, am I going mad, or did the ANC also march against itself this week?
That's crazy. I mean, what are they drinking? I mean, you wake up one morning and you decide you're going to march because service delivery is bad. The communication of government listening to the people on the ground are terrible, but you are the government. And then you go to the street and you demand better services, better hospitalization, better, 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 better. You voted them bloody in, you moron. So you now go put on your ANC t-shirts, you clap the placards, you walk around the place and you say, no, we better get better services. You are the service. So no, Chris Stain, you are not going mad. The world is mad. And we are sitting here and going, at times, if we didn't have Netflix that could take us away, we would be mad.
Netflix that could take us away. It's a fabulous conversation there between Chris and Neil, and I strongly recommend that you go and watch that one every Sunday. Looking to the week ahead, we have got the big climate change conference. That's being held in one of the former Soviet Union republics, and here's the preview from our partners at Bloomberg.
The COP29 climate talks will get underway within a matter of hours in Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan. Tessa Khan is the executive director of sustainability firm Uplift.
What really matters is that at home in a country like the UK, which, by the way, is also a major oil and gas drilling country, that the dependence and the increased production of fossil fuels has to stop.
The meeting is being held in the wake of recent deadly weather events, including floods in Valencia, Spain, and Hurricane Helene in the US.
So what do I take from that, and what should we all be taking from what's going to happen at COP now that it's very unlikely that the United States is going to be a participant in the future? They'll be, no doubt, quite an interested party right now. But we do know that Donald Trump, it's one of those lines in the sand that he doesn't cross. He's got many other issues that he might reconsider, but certainly not this one. My feeling is that the world is actually a little bit like a pendulum. We have these rhythms. It moved just too far to the one side, and when the people in power thought that they were impervious to any criticism, as happened in the United States, well, then the rest of society pulled it back, and the pendulum has now swung a bit to the other side. And I guess here in South Africa, the more we see these crazy situations occurring, the more politicians will realize that it's we, the people, who make the decisions on whether or not they should be in power, not their divine right. This has been the BizNews Briefing. I'm Alec Hogg. It's been my privilege and pleasure to be with you today. Until tomorrow at 7, cheerio.